Welcome to the DermVet Podcast. I'm Dr. Ashley Bourgeois, a board-certified veterinary dermatologist practicing in Portland, Oregon with animal dermatology clinics. I'm also a mom of two, just trying to find the balance like everyone else. Let's learn to ditch the itch, cytology, everything, and make derm more fun than frustrating. Happy 2021. We made it. Thank goodness. I figured I would kick off the new year with just a little episode about cats. I feel like cats sometimes get, you know, the shaft a little bit in medicine. We often just don't have as many medications or diagnostics for them. And derm is no different. We do have some limitations, but definitely things we can do to make these cats feel a lot better. And this won't be a super in-depth episode. I've previously done a discussion with my friend, Dr. Eva Gans, on episode 23 of the podcast. So we go a little bit more into treatment, diagnosis, differentiating. What I wanted to cover today, whether you're a vet student, and this will be great for a derm exam or the NAVLE if you get this question, or if you're a practicing veterinarian and just looking to recognize feline allergies a bit better, is to go over eosinophilic granuloma complex. And cats are really cool and unique with how they show us their allergies compared to dogs. You know, we see things like feline asthma, which I think I've maybe had one or two cases of potential asthma associated with allergies in dogs that have been referred to me from internists, but I've seen plenty of feline asthma. And then eosinophilic granuloma complex is another unique thing that we see from cats associated with their allergies. So when we talk about EGC, I want you to remember that it's not a final diagnosis. It's really another clinical presentation. So when we have eosinophilic granuloma complex in these cats, the question is why? So when you either biopsy or clinically see lesions associated with EGC, you have to start thinking about the underlying reason. And most of the time, it's going to be some form of hypersensitivity disorder. So, you know, yes, they respond to things like steroids and antibiotics, but it's really important to try to figure out why, just like any other allergic workup, so we can minimize the amount of medications in these cats and see if we can prevent these lesions from even happening. So there's no shame if you do have to biopsy some of these. You know, I've had some where I don't know if it's some weird tumor or something else going on, and I'll biopsy it to get the diagnosis. Sometimes you can do cytology on these lesions and see a ton of eosinophils, and that can give you the diagnosis or suspicion as well. But be thinking hypersensitivity disorders when you're seeing any of these presentations. EGC is made up of three different types, and or I don't know, types probably isn't the right word, three presentations of EGC. One, eosinophilic granuloma, so pretty easy, it's in the name. Two, eosinophilic plaque. And three, indolent ulcer. So just remembering those three kind of presentations that are within EGC will be really helpful. You can have cats that just show up with one of these, so they don't have to have all of them to be considered some form of, you know, having eosinophilic granuloma complex. I usually see one, maybe two. You know, they could have all three. So let's start out with eosinophilic granuloma. So I know this is hard to not have pictures on a podcast, but you can find tons of pictures online or in your textbooks. And I am working hopefully on some webinars coming out for you guys, because I have great pictures of a lot of these. But eosinophilic granuloma is variable in presentation. We often see it in anatomic locations like the caudal thighs, the face, the oral cavity. This is where I say it's always really important, if a cat will let you and they're willing, to see if you can look around the oral cavity, on the lips, on the hard and soft palates, because these can hide in those areas. The eosinophilic granuloma can be papular, nodular. It can kind of develop as an oval or linear, thickened mass or plaque-like lesion. They're usually really firm and they can vary in color. Usually we see them as like kind of this dark erythematous tissue, especially the ones that are on the soft palate. But depending on how chronic it is, it can look kind of salmon or orangey. Moving on to indolent ulcers. So this one's really interesting because you can see these be really, really mild or really severe. So indolent ulcers, these are little ulcerative lesions that occur on the upper lip. Usually it's kind of near their philtrum or it's adjacent to the canine teeth. So who knows if there's some traumatic, portion that causes these ulcers to happen along with allergies. They can be unilateral where you just get one little area on the upper lip, almost like an Elvis lip, or they can be bilateral. If you catch them really early, they can just be like slight, tiny little divots or crusts. And that's where I think even if a cat won't let you look into their full like mouth, soft and hard palate, just visualizing and pulling up around the lips can be helpful. I have found many early indolent ulcers on cats presenting and they're presenting for having a bald belly or for being really itchy. And it's just because those indolent ulcers aren't obvious to the owner yet. And when we look, it just gives us another clinical presentation of that cat's allergies. So making sure to kind of pull up and really evaluate those upper lips can be important. They also can get really bad. So they can become really deep ulcers that grow, become really well circumscribed areas. They can get really dark red, almost brown. They can come necrotic, alopecic. I have one cat right now I'm seeing that's doing really well, has a little granuloma on its hard palate we've been dealing with. But when the pet was adopted, it's and still is actually missing part of its upper lip from a previous really bad indolent ulcer before the current owner, who's really been committed to treating the allergies, has gotten involved. That cat literally has part of its lip eaten away, like forever. It's just scarred that way. So they can get pretty bad, but you can see them really mild as well. And so just make sure you're taking a look in those areas. And then finally, eosinophilic plaque. So eosinophilic plaque, we see usually on areas that the tongue can access. So we think licking is a really big contributing factor. So, we'll see it on the thighs, the abdomen. You can see them kind of on the hip areas. They can just be single lesions or they can have multiple plaques on their body. They're usually very well circumscribed. They can be erythematous, eroded. They can start oozing because they often are infected. They can become ulcerated and they can even become necrotic in some areas as well. So remember, eosinophilic granuloma, indolent ulcer, eosinophilic plaque. Those are going to be the three manifestations of eosinophilic granuloma complex. And the big key points when you see these lesions in cats, one, I'm just going to start out 2021 by saying hashtag cytology everything. You already know it. A significant portion of these are infected. And a lot of times they'll get a lot better even if you just treat them with antibiotics. But obviously we often need to calm down their symptoms, especially if they're really uncomfortable, not only by treating infection, but also with things like either corticosteroids or cyclosporin, really depending on that cat. But again, you want to start differentiating between the hypersensitivity disorders, whether you biopsy and find eosinophilic granulomic complex or you just can recognize it clinically on presentation. So that's where you dive in, just like any other derm case, into the history. So, what's the diet history? How old was this cat when they started showing these lesions? Is the cat on flea prevention? That's a really easy way to start. And I see tons of these cases that do really well just by implementing things like great quality flea control. Is there a seasonality to these lesions? Have they previously received steroid injections, antibiotics, tapering oral courses of steroids and have done really well, but then it comes back, say, a couple months later? does the cat have signs of asthma? That's often not linked together. I'll start asking owners, well, do they ever wheeze or cough or sneeze? And, you know, I've had some where they're like, oh yeah, they've been diagnosed with feline asthma based on radiographs. And then we can link those all together. And those cats can do really great on things like immunotherapy. So it's really just diving into the history like you would with any case, but making sure to do your cytology, because we want to make sure we're treating the infections appropriately. We also want to make sure we're ruling out the easy things. Good flea control, diet trial if needed, control the infection, make the cat comfortable, get to that diagnosis of rule out by, you know, ruling out flea and food if they're not strictly seasonal. So if we do have an atopic cat, we can decide, do we need to refer them to a dermatologist for allergy testing if the owner is willing? Do we need to keep them on some sort of therapy to keep their atopic dermatitis under control? So it's just like any other derm case, any other itchy cat or itchy dog at that point. But it's really important to recognize that these lesions are really quite unique to cats and are just another way they show us their allergies. So start asking about respiratory signs, start asking about, are they itchy? Go back to the basics, because you can make a world of a difference in these cats with eosinophilic granuloma complex by doing that. So happy 2021, a fun way to kick it off. You know, hopefully a way in the future, I'm hoping the next few months that I can start getting some on-demand webinars to you guys, so I can show you lots of pictures of these cases and you can keep making a difference in these cats' lives. Until next time, thanks for your support, and let's just have a fantastic year. We all need it.